The gentle and chaste Gandhari, who was the daughter of King Subal of Kandahar, or Gandhar, followed her husband, seeing that he was going to the Himalaya mountains, which are the delight of those who have accepted the staff of the renounced order, like fighters who have accepted a good lashing from the enemy. Purport. Saubalini, O Gandhari's daughter, of King Subal and wife of King Dhritarashtra, was ideal as a wife devoted to her husband. The Vedic civilization especially prepares chaste and devoted wives, of whom Gandhari is one amongst many mentioned in history. Lakshmiji Sita Devi was also a daughter of a great king, but she followed her husband, Lord Ramachandra, into the forest. Similarly, as a woman, Gandhari could have remained at home or at her father's house, but as a chaste and gentle lady, she followed her husband without consideration. Instructions for the renounced order of life were imparted to Dhritarashtra by Vidura, and Gandhari was by the side of her husband. But he did not ask her to follow him, because he was at that time fully determined, like a great warrior who faces all kinds of dangers in the battlefield. He was no longer attracted to so-called wife or relatives, and he decided to start alone. But as a chaste lady, Gandhari decided to follow her husband till the last moment. Maharaj Dhritarashtra accepted the order of Vanaprastha, and at this stage, the wife is allowed to remain as a voluntary servitor. But in the sannyas stage, no wife can stay with her former husband. A sannyasi is considered to be a dead man civilly, and therefore the wife becomes a civil widow without connection to her former husband. Maharaj Dhritarashtra did not deny his faithful wife, but she followed her husband at her own risk. The sannyasis accept a rod as the sign of the renounced order of life. There are two types of sannyasis: those who follow the Mayavadi philosophy, headed by Sripad Shankaracharya, accept only one rod, Ekadanda. But those who follow the Vaishnavite philosophy accept three combined rods, Tridanda. The Mayavadi sannyasis are Ekadandi swamis, whereas the Vaishnava sannyasis are known as Tridandi swamis, or more distinctly, Tridandi Goswamis, in order to be distinguished from the Mayavadi philosophers. The Ekadandi swamis are mostly fond of the Himalayas, but the Vaishnava sannyasis are fond of Vrindavan and Puri. The Vaishnava sannyasis are Narottamas, whereas the Mayavadi sannyasis are Dhiras. Maharaj Dhritarashtra was advised to follow the Dhiras because at that stage it was difficult for him to become a Narottama. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyatya Deshitarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the translation again: the gentle and chaste Gandhari, who was the daughter of King Subal of Gandhar, followed her husband, seeing that he was going to the Himalaya mountains, which are the delight of those who have accepted the staff of the renounced order, like fighters who have accepted a good lashing from the army. So first of all, I would like to seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas assembled here and in the online world, on the internet, and all the senior Vaishnavas, especially Godruma Prabhu, Sutapa Prabhu, Jagatpriya Mataji, but she's not here. Hare Krishna. So, hope you're all doing well. This is a very interesting verse today. I don't know why they called me in to give these kind of talks. I don't pick these verses. Last time I gave a talk on Vanaprastha, I was almost getting threat mails from everybody. So, anyway, I'll try and be more, what do you call, wishy-washy this time. but anyway, it is the verse is what it is, and we have to speak as Prabhupada has mentioned in the purport, and it's very, very interesting. Thank you, Kamal Prabhu. Thank you for the devotees for letting me speak. Usually they ask me like once a year to give class, but I think these are desperate times. There's no one around, so it's like, yeah, bring the riffraff in, whoever's here, let's just keep the classes going, you know. Anyway, so just some background. Before the Mahabharata war, this is what's been happening in the Bhagavatam so far. So before the Mahabharata war, Vidura goes to Dhritarashtra and tells him, look, you shouldn't take the kingdom, there's still time. The war hasn't started yet. Return the kingdom. Everybody lives happily ever after. And at this, Duryodhana gets really angry. And he says, he tells Vidura, you're like a traitor. We've raised you in this kingdom. We've looked after you. You're the son of a Shudra. We've looked after you so well. We've given you all opulence. And you're still not with us. And then he banishes Vidura. So Vidura says, well, all right, let's go then. So he goes on a pilgrimage, and then on the way he meets Maitreya Muni, and from Maitreya Muni he hears all about devotional service, and he tells him all the things that Krishna had told different people. So he hears all these things, and then by this time two very important things have happened already. One is the Mahabharata war's finished, okay, so he misses the whole thing, which is great for him because he wasn't going to fight anyway. And then the second thing that's happened is the war's finished, Krishna's gone back to Dwarka, and we're not going to go into the whole pastime, but the whole Yadu dynasty is destroyed. So, they, you know, there's the story of Samba and the iron bowl and then the grass growing and then fighting, and the whole Yadu dynasty is destroyed, and they all killed each other, and it's all finished. So then Vidura, at this time, he knows about this, and he turns up in Hastinapur. So there he meets Yudhishthir Maharaj. And here's something very, very interesting. And first time I read this pastime, I was like, what's going on? It was a bit like that. But then later on, it kind of became a bit more clear. So what happens? This is very, very interesting. So Vidura goes to Yudhishthir, and after all the pleasantries, and how are you, and water and drinks and meals and all that, he asks, so how's everything going? He goes, and you must have been to Dwarka, he says. So how is everybody in Dwarka? How are all the Yadus? How is Krishna? How is everybody? And Vidura says, you know what he says? He says, yeah, everything's fine. I'm like, why is he saying that? The whole, it's not like small news, it's like big news. The whole Yadu dynasty has been destroyed. There's no one there. And Vidura goes, yeah, fine. And I was like, why is he saying that? And then I read on a bit more, and it explains how Vidura did not want to bring calamity early to Yudhishthir Maharaj. When the time is right, he will find out. And because of his compassionate nature, he was very, very compassionate. And that's why he didn't want to tell Yudhishthir Maharaj. Because he would become really upset, he would become very, you know, sad because of hearing about all these things. And he didn't want to be the person doing that. So he goes, well, when the time is right, he'll find out. So I don't want to tell him now. So when I heard that, I was like, wow, you know, this is like next level stuff. Because you would think like there's something wrong there. If you know the truth, you should speak the truth, isn't it? This is what we think. I know the truth. It's true. Why don't I tell him? Because he can take some measures to kind of deal with it. But then I was thinking, you know, Vidura can't be wrong. Because Vidura is Yamaraj. Yamaraj is the one person who knows Dharma inside out. Okay, he knows everything. He's one of the 12 Mahajans, Yamaraj. He knows everything inside out. Vidura is very learned. He can't be wrong. He's obviously done the right thing. But why did he not tell them such an important thing? For this reason. So I was thinking about it as well, that in our life as well, when we know something, we immediately want to say it, especially bad news. When we hear bad news travels much faster than good news. When we know bad news, we want to tell everybody. I don't know why, but we like to tell people. But here's the interesting things, okay? Just because you have news doesn't mean you have to share it. Okay? Over time, it'll find its way, and that's the right way to do it. But you don't have to take responsibility for saying everything you know. Interesting, isn't it? So, a personal example I remember as well, that in my own life, sometimes, like before when I was in the ashram, I used to I used to see so many things wrong in so many places, and I used to bring it up. And once what happened was there was a new devotee, and he was chanting, but he was obviously chanting the mantra wrong, you know, when people chant really, really fast, and they skip certain words, and it was obviously wrong, and he'd been chanting over and over for like days. I'd been noticing it, and then I thought, well, let me just tell this guy, obviously he's chanting the mantra wrong for so many days, and he's not hearing, and he's not noticed, so let me just tell him. And then so one day I said, and I told him nicely in a humble way, Prabhu, you know, like, maybe you want to focus a bit more on, like, because it's very important to hear the mantra properly, because it's not. And he goes, yeah, okay, thanks for telling me. And I thought, okay, that was easy. And then he was like, but I put so much attention into my chanting already, how can you tell me that I'm not chanting the mantra properly? I'm like, uh-oh. And then it started going wrong. And then he like, no, Prabhu, I'm like, the best thing in my day is I try to chant the mantra properly. I sit down, I pay attention, and I'm like, well, obviously you're not paying attention because it's not, you're not chanting it properly. And then he got really annoyed and he got really fried. And it kind of turned out at the same time I was reading this verse, and then I read Vidura's whole thing, and I was like, yeah, you know, this is true. Just because something's the right thing to say, just because it's right doesn't mean it's the right thing to say. You see what I mean? It's like, you know, just because you're speaking the truth doesn't mean you're doing the right thing. So that truth is not truth based on fact. Truth is truth based on the motivation and the effect it has. Okay? So in this case, Vidura saw that he's going to get upset. He doesn't need to know right now. When the time is ready, he'll find out. Okay? So he doesn't say it. It's very interesting. So anyway, now, you know, I see so many things going wrong in the temple and everywhere. And I think I should tell Siddha Prabhu. But then I go, no, I don't want to bring unnecessary calamity upon Siddha Prabhu. When the time is right, he'll find out. Okay. So, Hare Krishna. So moving on. So then something very interesting happens. Okay? So after all that story is done, then Vidura goes back, and after his conversation with the Pandavas, with Yudhishthira Maharaj, and him not telling anything, then he goes to Dhritarashtra, and then he tells Dhritarashtra, he goes, get out of this house. So it's very interesting because Yudhishthira Maharaj actually asked him, how is the Yadu dynasty? He asked him like a direct question, and he said, it's fine. And then here Dhritarashtra is kind of minding his own business, and Vidura goes and tells him, like, get out of the house, what are you doing here? And Dhritarashtra is like really, like, he's like the king, you know, he's been a king all his life. You don't go and tell a king what to do. And especially if you're a person who's in Vedic culture, not king's a kshatriya, he's here. And although Vidura is a devotee and he's an amazing person, but in that society he's not considered very elevated. So he's like on the level of a Shudra. That's what they think anyway. So for him to tell the king, get out of the house, what are you doing here? And then, you know, like, why would you do that? Okay? It doesn't make sense. But he goes and tells Dhritarashtra, you should go. And what are his reasons? So just in the previous verse, the reasons are mentioned. So he says, well, first of all, look, everybody's dead, okay? All his life, Dhritarashtra held on to the kingdom, and he did so many bad things just to get Duryodhana and the Kauravas on the throne. And not only did that not happen, but all of his sons died. And everybody who he supported, everyone who he lived his life for, they all died, okay? So he goes, look, you've been trying something all your life. It didn't happen. Everyone's dead, number one. Okay, number two, he goes, you're old. Your teeth are popping out. No, he literally says that. It's there in the verse. He says, your teeth are falling off. He goes, you can't hear properly. You've been blind since birth. Okay, you don't even have a kingdom anymore. He goes, okay, that's number two. Okay, number three, he says, you're living under the shelter of people who you tried to kill. All your life you've been trying to kill them. We see in the Mahabharata, like so many different places, Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana in so many different ways, they're trying to kill the Pandavas so they can get the kingdom up until the war. Okay, so many ways, you've been trying to kill them all your life. Now they haven't died, your sons have died. They're like ruling the kingdom and you're living in their house. Okay? And then the fourth thing, this is like the final blow. He tells Dhritarashtra, you're just like a dog. And you're just eating scraps of food that Bhima is throwing at you. So that was like, when Dhritarashtra heard that, he goes, yeah, I gotta leave. I gotta get out of here. And then on top of that, Vidura says, just to make sure that he leaves, he tells him, leave. He goes, but don't tell anyone. Okay? Just get out of here. You don't need to tell your relatives. You don't need to tell your family. Nobody. Just leave. So very interesting. And then what happens is, you know the story, Dhritarashtra leaves, he doesn't tell anybody, and then next day, Yudhishthira Maharaj and they all come to offer their respects to Dhritarashtra, and he goes, oh, where is he? He's not here. Where's he gone? And then the rest of the story, I don't want to blow it for the next speaker, but you'll hear it later on. But let's just look at a few things that Prabhupada talks about in the purport. One thing that is mentioned in the verse is also that when Dhritarashtra leaves, Gandhari follows him. Okay, into the forest. So Prabhupada is talking about how Gandhari could have stayed in the palace. Okay, Dhritarashtra didn't ask her, come with me. Okay, he goes, you don't have to come with me to the forest, I'm going to go. He didn't even tell her. Okay, so she didn't have to go. And Prabhupada said she was a queen. Okay, she could have stayed in her house or in her father's house. Okay, because a woman's always meant to be sheltered. And if the husband goes to the forest, then she's not obliged to go to the forest. She can stay. And Prabhupada writes, she can go as a voluntary servitor. So she can go to help him out and she can follow him if she wants, but she's not obliged to. But she does. Okay? Very interesting. And then in the purport, so a few things that I sort of, that struck out for me was one of the things that is said is that at a certain point in his life, people should leave home. Okay, this is what Prabhupada mentions. And especially the higher two varnas. Higher two varnas. So Brahmanas have four varnas, Kshatriyas have three varnas. Brahmanas have four ashrams, Kshatriyas have three ashrams, Vaishyas have two, and Shudras have one. So in the top two varnas, there is Vanaprastha. So at least them, they should leave home and accept the renounced order of life. Second thing is that a chaste woman should follow her husband everywhere, even into the forest. And third thing that is also that comes out is that if a woman is chaste, she gets a lot of mystic powers. Mystic or spiritual powers, mystic powers, all kinds of things. And there's many examples in history about this. So when Vedic culture looks at society, it looks at it as an ongoing thing, and life is seen as eternal, of course. It's not just about this life, okay? So a woman following her husband, the husband going to the forest, is to do with one's sanatan dharma, one's eternal life. Okay, this body is going to come to an end, but I don't want to leave my body in attachment. So let's detach, let's focus fully on Krishna consciousness. And then in the next life, hopefully, you'll go back to Godhead. But if you don't, then that's okay. But at least we've made spiritual progress. So that's the idea. Okay? Now, let's just look at Varnashram system a little bit. So these Varnashram ashrams, do you know where they come from? Krishna makes them. Because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Chatur Varnyam Maya Shishtam Gunakarma Vibhaga Shaha Tasyam kartaram apimam vidya kartaram avyayam. So he says, I am the creator of these varnashram ashramas. So as far as possible, we should stick to them. Now, I know in the ISKCON world right now, the most popular ashram is the Grihastha ashram, where most people reside. The Brahmachari ashram sort of there is a structure to it. It's kind of going on okay. The Vanaprastha ashram is quite unclear. We're not really sure what it's meant to be like. But there are some devotees who have taken Vanaprastha. And then there is also the Sannyas ashram, which is also quite prominent. So in our society, we have these four things. And as far as possible, we should accept them because they are created by Krishna and there is a purpose behind it. Now, why are they created? Okay, why are these Varnashrama ashramas there? Because everybody is influenced by the three modes of material nature. Okay? And these Varnashrama ashramas are created to fit people into the right category. Guna karma vibhagasha, according to the three modes of material nature, Krishna has created them. And everybody fits into these. So as long as one is under the influence of the three modes of nature, one should try and follow Varnashrama ashramas. Once you're beyond the three modes of material nature, then you may have a reason not to follow, but you would still follow. You know why? Because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, yad yad acharati shreshtas tat tat evetaro jana sayat pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. Whatever great man do, common men follow. So just to set the example, Krishna says, even I am following all these things. Even Krishna went to Brahmachari ashram, served the Guru. Krishna went through the Grihastha ashram. So Krishna is also following to set the example. So that's why we should follow. Now, let me tell you, there is every reason to not take the Vanaprastha ashram. There are so many reasons. Because home is very comfortable. That's a very good reason. Because it's comfortable. Why would you want to leave your home and go into the forest? Or in today's world, where there are no forests left, you may want to go into temples and stuff like that. But why would you do that when you got a comfortable home? And second thing, very interestingly, okay, Prabhupada said, and this is a quote I hear quite often from people, devotees mention it, that Prabhupada said, if the wife is supportive and favorable, then one need not leave house. Okay, one can stay in the house and carry on. So these two things are there. But very interestingly, you'll see that in history, even though all these things were there, people still left their house and went into the forest. Okay, one popular example I can think of is Kardama Muni. And Prabhupada writes about this, that Kardama Muni in his house was born, who? Kapila Dev. And Kapila Dev is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Kardama Muni's wife, Devahuti, she prays that she wants to have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as her son. Krishna appears, but Kardama Muni says, great, but as soon as he comes, I'm going to go. That was the deal. And then Prabhupada writes that in the purport, he goes, why does he have to go? Like, you're going into the forest, but God's in your house, Baba. It's like he's here, he's taken birth in your house. So Kardama Muni, of all people, he had every reason to not go. Because Krishna is in his house. But he still went. Okay? Why did he go? Why did he go? To set an example. And it's a necessary part of the Varnashram system. Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshmana Dhaman Gorinitai Ki. So, do we have any other examples? Can someone think of any other examples where someone didn't need to go and into Vanaprastha, but they did? Any examples from Shastra? Any other ones? They shouldn't have gone, but they did. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, yeah, very good example. He had a very comfortable house, loving parents, loving mother, nice wife, beautiful wife, Lakshmi Devi herself. And he had his whole devotional service thing going on, isn't it? Sankirtan movement, everything was going on. But he still left. Okay, who else? Anybody else? Who? Pandu, yeah, Pandu left as well with Kunti and Madhuri, didn't he? Even the Pandavas, they left. They had a whole kingdom. Okay, after the whole war, they went to so much trouble, got a kingdom, and then after they got the kingdom, they left to go to the forest. Okay? So, there's every reason to not go, but just to set the example, one technically should go. Because in the four ashrams, in certain ashrams there is more attachment than the other. Like in the Brahmachari ashram, one is trained up to be renounced. Okay, so Brahmachari ashram is good training. And if one has taken up the Brahmachari ashram, then later in life it's easier for him to renounce. Okay, because that training is always there in him. The Grihastha ashram is when one develops a lot of attachment. because the nature of the grihastha ashram is that you have to take care of family. There's family affection, there's children, there's wife, there's home, there's so many things. So one develops a lot of attachment. But Krishna's system is, don't leave your body in the middle of all this attachment. And that's why there is vanaprastha life. And in vanaprastha life, the husband would go into the forest, and the wife can be with the husband, but Prabhupada says there is no sex life. Okay, that stops, you leave that behind in the grihastha ashram. Okay, there is no sex life in vanaprastha. But in vanaprastha, you can stay together because it's slow detachment, you see. So there is a system. But Prabhupada writes in the purport, once one takes sannyas, then one should have no contact with his wife. Like that. Sannyas means wife is looked after by her grown-up children, and the husband is out there preaching Krishna consciousness to everybody. Okay? Now, the question in the middle of all this is, what about the wife? Okay? What about her? Now, Prabhupada writes that a chaste wife will always follow her husband, just like Gandhari did. Gandhari's story is very, very interesting. Now, when she was selected to be married to Dhritarashtra, she found out from sources, you know, in those times it wasn't like, you know, Tinder or whatever, you know, you couldn't, sometimes you didn't even like see your husband or see your wife before the wedding, or sometimes you'd briefly see it, but there definitely wasn't, well, let's associate for at least 6 months and then, you know, see what my guru says. There's none of this kind of thing. It was just like, okay, you guys are getting married. So it was arranged. So when Gandhari found out that her husband was blind, what she did was she also accepted voluntary blindness. So she before she got married, she put a cloth over her eyes. And then she stayed in a blind state for the rest of her life, along with Dhritarashtra. And that gave her so much potency that at one point in the Mahabharata war, towards the end, when Duryodhana's about to go and fight Bhima, she tells Duryodhana, she says, you come to me and come to me naked because I got so much potency in my eyes that if I look at you, your body's going to turn to, like, what do you call it? Vajra, like steel, iron, okay? Stainless steel, like that. So anyway, Duryodhana turns up. Krishna somehow convinces him to at least wear something before going in front of his mother. So he does. And then when Gandhari looks at, takes a blindfold off, and she sees Duryodhana, his whole body, except the parts he'd covered, turn to steel. And then Bhima's not able to defeat him, except when he hits the parts where he, you know, shouldn't be hitting. So much potency, you would think. There's many stories, even in Shastra, in Vedic culture. There's a story that is there in the Vanaparma of the Mahabharata about Satyavan and Savitri, where Yamaraj comes and takes this person away. It's time for him to leave. And this lady, Savitri, is so chaste that she follows Yamaraj. And she follows him all the way to hell and brings him back. And in front of her chastity, Yamaraj has to surrender and says, okay, you have him back. So that much potency a woman can develop if she remains chaste to her husband. So there is benefit for both, okay? There is benefit for the husband because, oh, another thing I forget to tell you is it's mentioned in Shastra that if a woman is chaste and follows her husband, then she gets 50% of the good credit of her husband, okay? But if the husband does anything bad, then she doesn't take anything. So if the husband does some bad things or dodgy things, then that's up to him. But if he does something good, then the wife gets 50%. So I think it's a good deal, isn't it? Like pretty much in Vedic times, it's like it wasn't even, the woman didn't even need to practice any form of spirituality. Even if she stayed at home, when the husband went into the forest and took sannyas, and even if she just stayed at home, she would still get 50%. I mean, that's pretty good, I think, anyway. I was in Govardhan once, and I was walking around Govardhan, and I saw a couple doing Dandavat Parikrama. You know what Dandavat Parikrama is? So when they do obeisances, and then they go around Govardhan. And sometimes people take it to the next level. So they have like stones or pebbles, like 108 of them. So with every Dandavat, they put one pebble in front. So they do 108 in the same place. And I was like, oh my God. As soon as I saw him, my knees started hurting. Like, that must really hurt, you know, 100 times. It takes him about 2 years to go around. The mud parts are okay, but then imagine doing it on the tarmac in Jatipura in the middle of traffic all around you, and you're there for like 6 months, you know. So anyway, so this couple was there, and then he was doing the dandavats, okay, and his wife was there next to him on her phone, like chatting away. And then every time he did one dandavat, she would just bend down, touch his feet, and touch it to her head, and carry on the phone. And this guy would get up, pick up a stone, do dandavats, and as soon as he would go down, she's still chatting on the phone, she would just touch his feet, touch it to his head. So she's getting all the credit, whereas her husband's doing all the work. And that's okay. That's okay. That's not an issue, because that's how the ashram is designed. That's what it's there to do. If the wife follows the husband, then she gets the credit. And the husband knows that, the wife knows that, everybody does what they're meant to do, and everybody's happy. Okay, so that's how it works. What about staying at home if the wife is favorable and devoted? What happens then? Well, my answer to that is, people often quote that, isn't it? My answer to that is that, you know the verse, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva Gatiranyatha. Three times, it's mentioned three times, and Prabhupada writes it's for emphasis, okay? That is written three times. The only time Prabhupada said that one should stay at home is once. He only said that once. But there's many, 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 many times Prabhupada says that one should leave the house and go to the forest. Many times. See, if you take the same consideration, Prabhupada only said once, to Prabhupada said many, 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 many times. So obviously Prabhupada had more emphasis. In today's world, how does it work? I don't know. Now, the thing is, a version of vanaprastha could be, in today's world, maybe living in a temple, traveling, preaching. That's a version of vanaprastha. It could also be that husband and wife travel together to places of pilgrimage and preach together. That's also another version of vanaprastha. And you know, husband going out and preaching, wife staying at home, looking after kids or being looked after by the kids is also a version of vanaprastha. Living on a farm, serving, going away from city life is also a version of vanaprastha. So there's so many versions how it may or can be done. So how does it work? Now, one thing is that I'm not here to tell you that you should all take vanaprastha or everybody should take vanaprastha. That's not my sort of place to say that, because everybody is in a different circumstance in life. And it would also be wrong for me or anyone to say that everybody should take vanaprastha, okay? Because everybody's circumstance is different and it's very individual. So people may look at their situation and they can decide, okay, whether maybe they do more preaching like this or at Grahastha Life or vanaprastha. That's up to them to decide. But my point is, let's not change the principle, okay? The principle is that vanaprastha should be there. Based on that, you analyze the situation, and if it's not feasible for you, then that's your call. But don't try to change the principle and bring the principle down that it's not meant to be done. So it's not like that. Vanaprastha is part of one of the ashramas, and it's meant to be there. So I have a few other things, but I think I should stop here because I can see some questions bubbling up. But we have only 3 minutes, so at least we should take one question.